The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jim, and JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Flavor to itself?
Yes, like original bubblegum. Think about Bazooka Joe. One, about the high-quality comic strip, but two, about the flavor. Like, it's bubblegum flavor. It goes hand-in-hand with the pink bubblegum, and that's bubblegum flavor.
Isn't that strawberry?
No, it's bubblegum.
I'm pretty sure it's strawberry.
No. It's its own flavor.
Bubblegum in a dish. How many bubblegums do you wish?
And I want to thank Dubs for pulling me back to my childhood where Bazooka Joe was something. God.
Right?
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of childhoods, Jiminy Brennan.
Oh my God.
Look who's back.
He's back.
Where's the tan? Was it overcast there?
Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, talk to us. Your mic's not working, is it?
No.
It is.
No.
It's not.
It's definitely not.
It's not.
Your computer mic is working.
Hook it up and we'll keep talking about bubblegum and getting back to our youth.
Now we can hear you.
Now we're talking. Yeah. Okay. Welcome back, Jimmy. How was the trip?
It was great. It's good to be back. Funny enough, like I said, I miss you guys.
I don't believe you for a second.
I don't either.
No.
Miss you a lot.
No, even less believable.
Yeah. Do you get to switch off from football entirely, or are you always kind of drawn back into the football world when you're over there?
I switch off completely. Completely. Mm-hmm. Turn everything off. Because when you go there, it's important to relax and get away from it all, right? That's what it's meant to do. You're not meant to go there and work. So
did you sit inside or did you go outside?
I got color. Look.
You did.
That's a black t-shirt.
No, you just got tattoos.
Listen to the color there, maybe.
I'm a bronzer.
I'm a bronzer, not a grower.
Yeah. Just compare Jimmy's skin tone to mine, then he looks really tanned.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
true.
Bronzer.
So does that guy from the movie Powder. By the way, those who haven't watched it, I got to watch it. I'm sure the podcast have watched it. Jimmy was on TV just prior to leaving. He bought a cottage. I was shopping for a cottage.
Oh, yeah.
With my girlfriend, Jess. That was
so
amazing.
I get myself into some situations, don't I?
You saw it, Sharms?
Yeah, it was sent to us. The digital, I couldn't. It was like a train wreck.
Bootleg version. I know.
Jess is a natural though; she's good actually. And
yeah, she's good at that.
I mean, you were good, but I got the impression there were some lines that were kind of a little bit contrived that you had to try a few times. Is that correct?
Yes, they do. They help you out a lot.
They help you out.
They tell you what to say. And the thing is, too, like I'm not really a cottager, as you guys know. I don't like cottages. And then I'm there supposed to be surprised looking at cottages. Oh, this is amazing. It's the best thing I've ever seen. And my wish was contemporary, very cool, lots of windows. And I ended up getting rustic. So it's hard to show my emotions.
I had no idea that you loved a sunken living room so much. So now I know.
Antique bars.
Tiki bars, yeah.
70s tea parties.
Yeah.
For the audience who haven't seen it, what's the name of the show again and where can they find it?
It's Lakefront Properties, or Luxury Lakefront Properties. So it was a good show. It was a lot of fun.
Did you buy a cottage?
What's that?
Did you buy a cottage?
Oh, yeah, of course. You guys are all welcome.
Can't wait.
Jimmy's got so much money that even though he hates cottaging, he's bought a cottage. Yeah. His friends and family,
but we'll have to. That's great. We'll have to go when the owners aren't there. If you know what I mean.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Not as good as a wink to a blind bat. Yeah. Anyway, welcome back. Whole crew's back. Craig's back. And Jimmy's back. And you heard Wonger and JC's here with Chucky Boy. Chucky Girl, sorry. Jesus.
Chucky Galley Bones.
I knew a guy called Chucky Boy. That's why. Dubsy's here and I'm Shams. Dubsy, we're going to start with you because you read an article this morning, which you found pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Which kind of can fuel the podcast to start things off here before we get to some comments.
Okay. So it's an interesting article, given the fact that you reminded me, because I needed reminding, that MLS starts this weekend. Right. Jeez. So I'm sure we'll have all of our insiders on to talk about CF Montreal and TFC and Vancouver Whitecaps, respectively, amongst others. But there was an article by Paul Tenorio and Abby Creditor. He's not going to come after you for anything that you owe, as far as I know.
Creditor.
In The Athletic, and it's ranking the 30 MLS Cup winners. How does Messi's Inter Miami stack up? And it's less about Messi and Inter Miami, even though they end up towards the top of the ranking system. I think that's more to draw the reader in. But I thought it was interesting. So before I see, because I sent it along in the dark web, but before you guys read it and are kind of clouded or influenced or biased by the writers, what comes to mind if you guys had to, Craig, I'll start with you. If you had to rank the 30 MLS Cup winners thus far, who would be, say, in your top three, or who comes to mind first?
Toronto FC. Ooh.
It was very a pretty special team. It was a very good team. I'm going to jump out and go with the Beckham LA Galaxy. Pretty great team.
Yep. I will say before we name any other teams, that Forrest, like what comes to mind for him, and I think means a lot for Canadians or especially TFC fans, maybe you, Jimmy, even you, that is the number one ranked MLS Cup winner. It's 2017 Toronto FC.
Mm. Really?
Yes.
What was the justification behind that?
Well, I think it's talking about like the roster construction, the regular season performance, notable DPs, the quality of the final itself were some of the variables considered. And then obviously the performance in the playoffs, who they had to beat in order to get to the final, all of those things were taken into consideration.
Well, Jimmy, I mean, that spine, right? From, you know, Drew Moore, you got Bradley in the midfield to Josie and Seba. I mean, yeah, it's tough to, it is tough to, are you trying to remove the TFC rose-colored glasses that being so close to the team that we might have? And it's nice to hear that someone outside of that little echo chamber agrees within this article. But yeah, Jimmy, that team was extremely special and tough to debate.
It really was. I mean, I just think they built the team right. The spine was solid. They had good leaders mixed with some young players. And I just think the brand of football that they were playing at the time as well just suited up everybody that was out in the pitch. You know, Altidore and Giovenco worked amazing together. You had that big body up top that pushed back defenders, created space for Giovenco to get in and around him, you know, and he produced an awful lot of magic that year as well, you know, stepping up, his free kicks, scoring goals, creating. I thought also was great in Bradley in the middle of the park. And at the back, they were solid. We had a solid goalkeeper. So I think that's the thing. When you build a solid spine with experience and good leaders, I think the rest tends to fall into place. So their performance throughout the season was fantastic and fun to watch. The win in MLS Cup. Was it that year as well that they went to the Champions League final?
Was
it the year before as they were putting this whole team together?
Yeah.
I know the year before, and this isn't knowledge that I have because I have very little MLS knowledge before I got involved as a sideline reporter for CF Montreal in the pandemic season, but they went to the final and lost to Seattle in 2016, but I don't know about the Champions Cup.
Or 2018.
Was it 2018? They lost to, was it Tigres or?
No, I'm saying 2018 they lost to Seattle in the final because it was the year after, wasn't it? Yeah.
But also 2016, no?
Yes. No, I don't. Oh, they lost to Seattle twice?
They lost it and then won it.
And then we lost it again.
Yeah. Oh, it could be a song.
Yeah. Mm. Well, can I'm going to ask. I'm not. Can I ask? has there ever, I don't know, I'm like Dubs, I only started following MLS when we started this podcast. Has there ever been a team close to a dynasty within the years of MLS that kind of head and shoulders above as a club, as a team on the pitch? Has there been close? I don't know why I'm struggling here, but has any team been a dynasty or close to it?
LA Galaxy.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a time when they were pretty strong.
And how many years? Like 2, 3, 4?
No, I mean, there's very few back-to-back. They won back-to-back in 11 and 12. And that was,
but that was a big the thing end of the then,
Beckham,
obviously.
Beckham era, right? Wasn't it? Was it not?
Right.
He won 2, didn't he? And that's why they kind of jumped out to me, the way they're constructed. They were the first, I guess, kind of Galacticos before they were really Galacticos.
Well, you can't forget about DC United as well. When MLS started, they won 3 or 4 in a row. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 96, 97, DC United. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they went 3 or 4.
It's not structured, the league, to have a dynasty.
No, I know, but you say this. You could say the same thing about the NFL with franchises and salary caps. And either way, there are teams that find a way to create dynasties, right? Good whether point. Or not it's built yeah. that way or True. Not.
Well, it's these commissioners that want, they love parody, don't they?
I don't, yeah, parody's good.
I don't know, is it? I find it boring.
No. It's good for a certain point, and then it's great for these other things to happen because dynasties create kind of the Man Uniteds of the world, the New York Yankees of it all, who you just hate and everybody hates them. So there's,
which is good though, isn't that good yes. for the sport? So to have those, you know, awful enemies of everyone else, the teams that you just hate and despise. Hatred's good in a league, mm-hmm. right? And that really encourages hatred. The Cowboys, like you mentioned, there were like despised, right? But you also respected them.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think what's interesting here, though, if you're comparing winners across MLS's existence, all 30 years, is that it's prior to the salary cap restrictions. It's prior to like the tweaking of the rules, obviously those ridiculous penalty shots, which I kind of like. And then the TAM players now, prior to expansion or while expansion was happening, and then the boom in it and the increase in valuations and the way that the league is perceived worldwide. Like all of these winners are happening. They're going to MLS Cup finals and trying to build their own brand while all of this is happening. So I think it's really interesting to see how you can compare and contrast. And maybe somebody might argue, well, you can't really compare eras, but you do anyway, because they're all MLS Cup champs. So that it wasn't just these two authors who did it. It was former MLS stars, league winners, and some execs who were consulted in order to get this final ranking.
Hey Dubs, where was Columbus? Bezos Columbus ranked there? Was it up there near the top? It's a real good team. That was what, 3 years ago now?
Was that at the COVID winning crew?
Yeah,
29th.
Oh, 29th. Okay, fair enough.
Sharps doesn't know what he's talking about.
No, that was a really good team though. It was a great team.
I thought so too.
Went over there and reconstructed it, right? So
yeah.
So can you give me sorry, go ahead, Jimmy.
Sorry, going back to TFC over that 3 year period. I think one part of the reasons why they're getting noticed was because in 2016, they won the Eastern Conference. Then they won it in 2017, and 2019, won Supporters Shield in 2017, MLS Cup 2017, Canadian Championship 2016, 17, 18. In 2018, they got to the CONCACAF Champions League final where they lost to Guadalajara.
Mm. Guadalajara, that's right.
So that 3 year period was very, very good.
Right. Dominant, but not a dynasty, because they know the one cup. Came close. You got to win the cup, right, to be considered a dynasty. You can have as many final appearances and Canadian championships as you want. You got to win the big prize more than once. A dynasty for me is two or more. Like more than two. Three or more.
To me, it's three, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you could argue that that was part of the best bit of business in MLS history was those three, Bradley, Altidore, and Giovinco.
Yep. It's interesting that you say that, Forrest, because in all the factors that were considered for these rankings, they mentioned the 2017 TFC team as the key to success in MLS is getting your DP players right, and TFC nailed all three.
After getting it wrong the year before.
Well.
Well, before and after. And
Shit show. Boy, that's true.
Yeah, so do you guys want to hear the top 10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so number 9 is 1998 Chicago Fire. So they won the double that year, MLS Cup, US Open Cup. 2012 LA Galaxy, fourth in Western Conference, but went on to win the Cup. 2018 Atlanta United. That was the highest attended MLS Cup ever, over 73,000. So it's their second year in MLS, they won it. 2014 LA Galaxy. Second in Western Conference, and they took out the holder, Seattle. 2023 Columbus Crew, which is one that I remember because CF Montreal lost Wilfred Nancy and then went on to win it. They were third in the Eastern Conference and playing Nancy ball there all the way to success. 2022 LAFC.
Sorry, Dub. The Columbus was what number?
6.
Okay, so not 29th. I said Columbus.
You said Bez's pandemic winning team, and that was in 2020, and that was 29th. This is 2023 Columbus Crew. They're number 6.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I got my crews mixed up. Sorry.
You did. I'm going to keep cruising along here, though, if you don't mind. Number 5 is 2022 LAFC. I think everybody remembers that one, right? For Maxim Kripo's part that he played in that, and obviously the signing of Gareth Bale, which hadn't really come to fruition, or everybody's like, this is a bit of a failing, and then single moment at the death with that header, right? The head on the equalizer. Number 4, 2011 LA Galaxy. Oh, so interesting. So we talked about dynasty, right? So the exact wording is the beginning of the Galaxy's dynasty under Bruce Arena. Number 3, 1997 DC United. 2 is 2025 Inter Miami.
Oh.
And recent number spies. 1, as mentioned, 2017 TFC.
I mean, it's tough to really argue too much about Inter Miami. We can almost underrate them because of the recency bias.
Yeah.
But pretty great team.
Oh, yeah.
The goals they scored. Defensively, perhaps not in the regular season, but they found themselves in the postseason, and you throw Messi in there with the Busquets and the Albas, you know, I mean, my God, it's pretty crazy. That could be we could be talking about this in 3 years' time, saying it's a dynasty.
Oh, yeah. Just the sheer talent and depth on that roster.
Who's the guy at the back? Falcone? Is that the guy with the big afro?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just because of his 70s afro, I'm going to say he should
it's
be
a good reason. Mm-hmm. Let's find out who the, I'm assuming their favorites this year, right? Have to be.
Yeah.
Let me,
have they done that yet? Or are you looking at odds?
I'm looking at odds.
Oh. And remember too, sorry, I was just going to say like even. The how deep this team was, that Suarez, amongst the greatest strikers of all time, it could be argued, didn't get off the bench in the MLS Cup.
Mm. Yeah. Yet he's still there.
Mm. Yep.
Okay, I'm trying to look it up here. I'm assuming it's going to be Inter Miami though favorites. There's no reason why they wouldn't be.
And 20 goals in a single postseason is the new league standard.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you threw out Nancy Dubs going over to Crew that year, but maybe we should talk about what Craig wanted to talk about. Thomas Frank. This is the manager section of this show. Thomas Frank getting let go, Craigor. And you threw on the dark web. He should have stayed at Brentford. And we talked about this, but what's your insight on and your look on this manager carousel and him moving in and then moving out?
Where managers go to die.
No, that's Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing, right? That's another thing altogether. Yeah. Thomas Frank did so well at Brentford. He gets his opportunity at Spurs. And was he there for 8 months? And they're going to make a change. The merry-go-round at the bottom continues. Nottingham Forest, as you mentioned, onto their fourth manager. That's a record in a Premier League season. Their owner is a bit of a head case, but you got to give him credit for what he's done with that club to a point. He's done very, very well getting them in the Premier League, staying in the Premier League, qualifying for Europe, and then now they're going to find themselves in a little bit of trouble. But he's quick on the trigger. Sean Dyche, I think, was winning percentage was like 47%. Wasn't too bad, but not good enough for the owner to make a change and bring Pereira in, who he knows quite well. And he says he can handle the pressure because he knows the manager. But we know what that club's all about now. You have to win matches and get results at a pretty steady pace, or you're going to find yourself out the door.
I'm so disappointed in Thomas Frank. He let me down. You know, I thought it was a great hire at Spurs. I really did. Thought this guy it was the right time to move on to a big club. And for whatever reason, I mean, listen, he had a ton of injuries too to deal with. And as Big Ange said just last week, you know, this team isn't a big club. They think they are. They try to act like they are, but they don't spend the money like they are. Mm-hmm. So that's partly what it is. But he did, like you said, he was such a big part of Brentford, from the recruitment right to the on-pitch displays. And I thought, man, that's the type of cerebral manager Spurs needs in the wake of Big Ange last year. And it just hasn't worked. I mean, I think I said it last week, right? It screams to me of Graham Potter when he left Brighton for Chelsea, and how it was, mm-hmm. it seemed to be the time, but really it was probably the wrong club at the wrong time, because he's clearly a good manager.
Mm-hmm. I think with Spurs too, you have to start looking at other things other than managers. What is the problem? What is the underlying problem at Spurs? Is it culture? Is it ownership? Is it both? You know, because there's a bunch of stack of managers here in a row at Spurs that have not been successful at all. So you have to start looking at other reasons why they haven't been successful.
Well, it was Daniel Levy's fault, wasn't it? And now he's gone. So you can't blame him anymore.
They can't blame him.
But you need a scapegoat. You need somebody to pin it on, and the manager is always going to be the person who takes the fall.
True. Yeah.
Wasn't that a song? I think it was a song, wasn't it? The manager always takes the fall. Was the hero. Whatever.
But you got to also think about who's doing the hiring. They have to be held accountable as well. Like, how do you go through four managers in 1 year? You're obviously doing it wrong, not getting the right manager for the club. Tottenham, the exact same thing. Someone's got to be held accountable for it. But you never hear anybody being accountable for it. They just fire the manager, bring the next one in. This guy's not getting results after 10 games. Oh, let's fire him then. Let's go get the next guy. Behind the scenes, like, what are you doing? Are you getting the right manager? What's the protocol? Because it's become a shit show. And you think even like the Premier League would step in at some point and say, okay, enough's enough, because this is not a good image for our league when you've got four managers here already in the season, three managers at this club. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing.
It's all the scare. It's all the worry about being relegated.
Yeah.
You'll never, ever in the history of MLS see four managers in a year. No. It's just not going to happen because there's no fear of relegation.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think Forest or Tottenham are going to go down, because I think the teams of this, and West Ham included, I think there's teams below them that are
well, that's what I was going to bring up, Craig. Right now, Tottenham is in 16th with 29 points. Forest is at 27 points, and West Ham is at 24 points. So I think what we should have is a Forest Brennan contest here. And whoever's team gets demoted has to do full on Just for Men black. And they have to come on with their beard and what hair they have fully done up. How about that? Whoever's team goes down. Can I get you to say yes to this? This would be great.
Well, I don't have any hair to put it
on. No, but your beard would look great if it was stark black.
He's got a beard.
I'll do that myself.
I do my hair.
No, you always do the light brown. Jimmy showed you the light brown, but I think you guys should come on. If Jimmy came on, like, with it would be almost comical how black it would look. It would be great, Jimmy. You could look 27 again.
I'm not taking that bet, because I think unless it's a handicap,
Right. What would the handicap? You're 23. It's only 3 points.
Yeah. Well, when you're down at the bottom, boy, every point's a prisoner.
Hey, Jimmy, what's the fan vibe around Mariakas and Forest right now? As far as, you know, all these managers and bringing in Vitor Pereira, who another combustible character. It could go really well or it could go really wrong.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a lot of optimism when Sean Dyche came in with Ian Wone and Stoney, because they're Forest guys. You know, they come through the system, played in the first team. Well, Dyche didn't, but Dyche grew up coming through the system. And I think the fans could relate to them as well. They saw their passion. They know their work rate. They know that it was a group that, you know, loved the club. And obviously, when you look at it and think, okay, you didn't get enough time. I mean, you play against Wolves. You have 35 shots, which is a record in the Premier League. So they created opportunities, just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And thinking, we've done everything right here. But then you go into the office and you're getting fired. So I think the fans at first were pretty upset about it in the way that it went. Yes, it's all about results and getting the 3 points, which they needed. But now to have four managers in here, I think fans could kind of just look at it now and think, this is getting ridiculous. You've got to give a bit of time for a manager, don't you, when he's in place? Because it does take time.
What's happened to Chris Wood?
The manager with 35 shots on net, I think there's another problem there.
Yeah, it's finishing, right? If they could just finish, he would still be in a job. It's that simple. The hardest thing to do on the pitch, score goals. Chris Wood's been out for a bit, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, he's been injured.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, for quite a while, as you know. Yeah,
pretty much the whole season.
Yeah. Well, there's your answer.
Yeah.
Do you think Chris Wood would have put some of those away?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Sucks being a manager. Like, my God. It's this, got to score goals, right? You can't really coach scoring goals. You either can, you can't. Tough.
That's it. I mean, then you bring in Igor Jesus. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. He works hard, works the back line, but he's not as prolific and clinical as what Chris Wood is. Hmm. You know, Chris Wood needs one opportunity where Igor needs five opportunities to get the one.
Yeah, he wasn't a savior, that's for sure.
No. Jesus.
He wasn't the second coming of Chris Whip.
There were like six of us ready to pounce on that.
I know. I was waiting for someone. Like, come on, someone. Just do it. It's so easy.
It's great thing.
Oh, boy. Crazy. We got some comments, right, Wong?
We do. We've had because of what's happened with Canada Soccer Media and Entertainment and the signing of their deal, which obviously lots going on behind the scenes. And I wanted to get a vibe of what people are thinking. So one of the big Sharms put Kevin Blue on the spot yesterday at the end of the show yesterday.
I quite enjoyed that.
If you want to listen, it was well done, Sharms, done with a little wry smile. But he put Kevin on the spot with, will Jesse Marsh be signed? Will that be the next big thing, basically, he asked. So didn't really ask about before or after the World Cup, but what's the next big thing? And so a couple of comments about that and just Marsh in general. That one came up and went away. Our friend Jethro at 1963, most fans' opinions I've read have said, wait for the result. I'll just comment on that. Jethro, that's on YouTube. We see Apple comments and Spotify comments too, just so you know. Results of the World Cup before the decision on Marsh be made. Yes, he has done several good things, but we were being touted for gold in both the Gold Cup and Nations League and came up short in both. Yes, he brought people into the program, but so did Herdman, Eustáquio, Kone, and he began to process and he began the process for Flores and Jebison. The World Cup is really the whole point of the exercise. If you have a bad showing there, when you should have a good one, why should the coach remain? We don't want to keep the status quo. We want to move forward. Hard to argue with that too, right? It's pointed and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucid comment.
Yeah. No, it's a valid point. I like it. I mean, listen, we've talked about this a lot last week.
If we didn't know Jesse, can I ask this? We have all met Jesse. We like Jesse. He's been on our show a few times. If we were looking in and saying having to run the American side with Potch, would we be so, is this a recency bias thing too for us?
I don't think it's recency bias. My recency bias goes back as far as Copa America.
Relationship bias.
Hmm. Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, listen. I don't know what the answer is, quite honestly.
I don't think so.
I said before, you think, yeah, I think he's over a couple of years now, right? It's been a couple of years of this team going the right direction, evolving from John Herdman, who did a great job as well. Mm-hmm. Change at the right time. The team's better now than when he took over, I think it's fair to say. There's a lot more depth than there was. But like I said before, yeah, ideally you sign Jesse Marsh. I want to see him re-sign. He's the right man for the job. But it's not as if he's the only coach available who could do a good job. There's other good football people out there. So worst case scenario, Jesse decides post-World Cup, I'm not going to sign my deal. I'm going to go to the States. I'm going to go back to club football. Okay, thanks for the memories. You're brilliant. But Canada won't crumble.
I think overall, though, you look at the whole picture, the sample size that Jesse has given us, you have to say he's done a very good job. Yeah, there's a few things that he hasn't probably met the criteria, I guess, with the Gold Cup and the Nations League, but overall, I think that he's done a very good job to this point.
Can I ask if we were once again just looking at the breadth of history and legacy, are most coaches only re-signed, and this is my ignorance, are most national team clubs, are the coaches only re-signed after a good showing or after the World Cup performance, whatever that is? Is that the normal way, the traditional way?
I would say yes, generally speaking.
Okay.
Yeah. Even like we look at like Southgate back in the day, you know, he had a good performance and got re-signed a few times, I think.
So it's the gold standard, yeah. Right? It's the grand litmus test of, right, of performance. It's the World Cup. So how did you do? Did you do well? Let's extend you. Or were you shite? Did you underperform? You're binned. Somebody else is hired. But I think, can you put the comment up one more time, Wonger?
Yeah.
That at hand. So I just wanted to reread the last sentence. We don't want to keep the status quo. We want to move forward. Just wanted to make sure I had that right. So I think I've mentioned this before, maybe not in as many words, but we as Canada, we have to understand where we are, right, as compared to the rest of the world. And I think Jesse Marsh right now is a really good fit, and he has advanced the status quo. And that's even before this team has stepped on the pitch at their second World Cup in as many cycles. And obviously, it's not the erasure of the 86 World Cup, but in recent times. So they're on to something here, but I don't think you just use the World Cup as your litmus test, as a way to evaluate Jesse Marsh and what he's done for the game in this country and for the men's national team. You look at his body of work over the last 2 years, and that in itself has advanced the status quo. So I've said it before, I think we have our man for the next little bit. Even, I'll go so far to say, even if the World Cup is a little bit disappointing, if we crash out, that's a different story. But if we don't go as far as everybody, fan base, brass at Canada Soccer, pundits think that this team should be on the merits of past performances or recent performances, and also the breadth of talent that at Jesse Marsh's disposal. Mm-hmm. I think that you look at like sort of the macro look and the broader picture of what he's brought to Canada Soccer. And I think that that has advanced the status quo.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good point, I think, because we're not Brazil, Argentina, England, who are basing everything on winning the World Cup. Anything less is a failure. That's not Canada. It's the big picture. It's this World Cup and beyond, how we grow from that. Getting a trophy, be that a Gold Cup or a Nations League, that's fantastic. But yeah, that's a good point, I think. Yeah, give the guys a break. No, I think a lot of people are, you know what? I mean, again, not to, we've been doing this so much into the World Cup, but it might well be that we have to qualify as a best third place team from that group. It's a good group. You've got Italy, potentially. Say it's Italy. Okay, just say. Right? By far the favorites in the group. Switzerland are a really good team. And people just assuming Canada's going to get a result against Switzerland are kidding themselves. That's going to be a battle. I'm not saying they can't do it. But it's going to be a battle. It's a tough group. Mm. Right? And oh, Qatar will smash Qatar, put seven past them. Give yourself a shake. It's international football.
Mm. And tournament football.
And tournament football.
It's tough.
I was watching the highlights of the Canada women's game against Switzerland. And I was thinking of you three playing for Canada, going in on a defensive level, whether it was the juggernauts Americans that Dubs was going against or Jimmy and Craig going against the juggernaut Mexicans at the time. When you've got, and what happened in that game, Canada won 2-1, but it seemed that Switzerland went in going, hey, we're going to play for a tie and look for our chances, or play defensively and look for our chances. Once that first goal goes across the line and you're now that defensive team that has to switch, how difficult is that to do on the pitch? How difficult is it to go, hey, we now have to get a, we got a point. We need to point. How hard is it? Jimmy, Amy, Craig? What's that, Jim?
It depends when you score. If you score in the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh, fuck.
No, what if it's the other way around? You get scored on.
Well, you get scored on.
Your game plan completely changes.
Yeah. And how hard is it to shift, though? That's my question.
Down to preparation and ability to be able to do that and know what your jobs are at that point and how you have to change on the fly. You better be well rehearsed in that manner for plan A, B, and C.
I think also you can see in the first 10 minutes or so, you're looking, thinking, don't panic. You got 80 odd minutes left in this match we're going to get an opportunity here at some point. Stay focused, stay calm.
Yeah.
And then the game dictates to you what's going to happen. So your experience, you're playing international football. There's a reason why you're playing international football, is because you're one of the best players in the country and you're playing at a high level somewhere. And you know that you've been in these situations before. You know how it goes, right? Whether you concede or you're 1-0 up, you make sure you're organized. If you concede, it's that next 5 minutes where you're most vulnerable. You've got to stay focused until the game kind of dies down a little bit. Because you know they're going to be on the front foot. So this is just the experience of being through it all and collectively staying together and organized and making sure that you're still focused, you stick to the game plan. And then as the game goes on, if you're still down 1-0 and you've got 20 minutes left in the match, then you know there's going to be changes. You might end up going a little bit direct. You could change your formation. But, you know, it's the first half. You don't change things too much. You continue sticking to the game plan. Second half is when tactically it really starts to change a little bit more.
I think too, there's your preparation as Forrest and Jimmy have alluded to, like your coaches have prepped you with various scenarios and the game plan. If, you know, scenario A, B, or C was to happen, maybe you're shifting to a more defensive structure. Maybe you're making a substitution. Maybe you're doing different things on set pieces. But it's also tournament play. And what's happening. So in the Olympics, how have you performed in your previous matches? Are your big guns firing? Are they scoring? Like, is the team feeling confident? That very much factors into it. But it's also like your mindset. Like Canada right now, to go back to the hockey and the example that you kind of teed us up with, Wonger, they are very much the favorites. The U.S. this year is stacked. Like, they are the overwhelming favorites in women's hockey. And Canada's just trying to hang in. So I don't think it's sort of predestined or it's a fait accompli that the U.S. women are going to get the gold medal. I think Canada always has a chance. But playing against an upstart Switzerland team, when Canada looked a little bit shaky, Canada looked a little bit uncertain, then Switzerland senses that. So even though they were very badly outclassed and outshot, they feel that there's that little bit of a, like a chink in the armor, and they have a chance. They can stay in the game if they can just hang in and keep their defensive structure right. So as a Canadian, that was very much our mindset because we were never the favorites. Mm-hmm. So we had a chance to just go in there and fucking wreck it, blow it wide open and watch how they responded. And usually they had the class and the composure to still be able to get it over the line and the talent, right? And the quality. And Canada very much has that, but it's gripping the stick, all of the, a little bit too tightly, like all of the cliches, right? When you're the favorite and you're the overwhelming favorite and you're expected to do it, that's a different kind of pressure than when you're the underdog and you just have to go out there and wreck it and try to do something a little bit different. And you need somebody to perform really big, whether that's your goaltender, your goalkeeper, or your striker who can bag a goal, or, you know, Marie-Philippe Poulin, who's captain clutch and can score at the drop of a hat, even on a bum knee, right? So I think it's how that all factors in. So Canada, to pivot back to our prospects or the promise of something at this Men's World Cup, they are still, even though their standing has improved, they're still very much the underdog in that group. As Sharms pointed out, it's a very difficult group. So I think I give the edge to Canada, especially the style that we play. It'll be easy to go in there confident. Maybe expectations are a little bit more on the shoulders of Jesse Marsh in Canada, but you're still very much out there to try to disrupt everybody else. And I think that plays into our hands.
Mm. And the advantage of playing at home is historically huge.
Yep. But there's also the pressure that comes with that.
Yeah, but you enjoy that pressure though, right? Playing at home in front of your own fans. I would have loved that. I would have loved to play in the World Cup at home. In front of my own fans.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it's like us, and you know, going back to what you're saying, Dubs, like, I remember when we played Colombia in the Gold Cup final, and their team was stacked. They had some great players. And I remember thinking, okay, we're going to be defending quite a bit here. They're going to have a good rhythm in this match. But you just sense moments of the match where the momentum's changing. And all of a sudden now we're on the front foot a little bit. I think we were thinking, we're going to get an opportunity here. They're a little bit frustrated because they probably thought they were going to come out and they'd be, you know, 2-3-0 up after 30 odd minutes, but they weren't. And then when we felt that momentum changing, they started getting a little bit frustrated. Well, that's when the cracks started to show. We ended up scoring. Now they're on the front foot. And then you could see them kind of arguing a little bit with each other. And then all of a sudden there was another opening. We ended up getting the second goal. And then we saw the game off, but you wait for those moments. You know, you're not going to have 90% of a possession in a match. Especially, you know, if Canada's going to be playing Italy or Switzerland, who's a tournament team. But those moments that you get when you sense, okay, we've got something here, and you get on the front foot now, that's where the fans are going to come into play big time. Because that momentum, once that changes and the fans, you hear that roar, that's going to give you some extra energy going forward for sure.
Now, to answer your question, Wonger, if you're going to go into a defensive structure to start out, and you can see in the first 5 minutes, that is the shit.
Yeah,
that's what I was actually wondering. Like sitting, I was thinking of you, Craig, just sitting there going, I've got another 90 minutes to go through this where I'm going to get pelted, right? Peppered. And my job isn't going to be any easier. And no one else is, everyone else is going, hey, we're just going to be sitting back, getting lobbed at, and the talent is too good and all of that. So that was actually interesting to me too. Just how depressing it is.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to what Jimmy was saying, like before it's that tangible shift into like a wave of momentum where the fans sense it, the energy really changes in the stadium or in the arena. It really is a moment. Or it's like one action, whether it's a save from the goalkeeper, it's the other team missing a sitter, it's a tackle, and it's that shift where you feel it as a player, whether it's looking into the other players, like the opponent's eyes, or it's the body language, or it's them getting into it, arguing with one another. It's really something that you really do not just perceive from the outside, but you really feel when you're on the pitch, and it's in an instant that can swing or shift. And then it turns into a wave because then everything else builds on top of that.
Yeah.
Couple of things. Firstly, I really hope there will be enough Canadian fans in the stadium to hear that roar.
Well, that's an interesting point. Like the ticket prices are what they are at and where these tickets being sold, or true fans, you know, I'm not sure. Yeah. You're going to get that. Is it going to be hostile? No, it will not be hostile.
Secondly, Canada, I mean, it's not as if they are a team that is comfortable with the ball at their feet all the time. They're quite happy to sit back and counter, and that's where their strength lies in attack. They like chaos, this team, which is exciting. They like a bit of chaos. So if they go down 1-0, I don't think anything changes too much, like Jimmy alluded to there, with their system, until maybe 5 minutes left. Maybe they change things up, obviously, but they are a team that does sit and pushes up and causes that chaos and tries to get the other team off their game. So interesting, though. Good conversation. I love that goal.
Question Wonger.
Little breakdown there as well, actually. That was great. That'll be our YouTube video, by the way. It's around about 36-ish, Wonger.
I also like the fact that... yes.
Well, that it was your question.
I can see Craig. Oh,
fucking hell.
Great question, Wonger.
Wonger's on a roll.
Am I breaking up right now?
He really is. What's that?
Am I breaking up? Doing? Sorry?
No.
There's a bit of a...
We're not breaking up.
No, it's not.
Is it not working?
It's not you, it's us.
Stop moving your hands like that.
Yeah,
it's not helping.
I don't know if I'm on air. Am I on air?
Yes, you are.
You're on air.
Yes. Oh, okay. My computer malfunctioned there a little bit. Oh, sorry. So, Sharms, I'm going to let you decide where we're going. You wrote in USA schedule, billion. You wrote Joy Division. Oh, yeah. And you
Let's
wrote
go Joy Division
pitch.
For a billion. That's some.
Let's go Joy Division. Okay.
And then billion. This is from Kev J. Kevin Adian.
Kevin Adian.
He's referring to yesterday, Kevin Blue. Kevin Blue on Kevin Blue Monday. Joy, not division. That's clever. I like that.
All right.
Blue Monday.
And then billion?
Yeah, billion, yeah. We had the fun last week at the expense of our boy Josh Cloak.
Yes.
Regarding how many digits are in 10 million or a bajillion. So fourth deconstruction, let's say the highest 10 digits number is close to 10 billion. I won't try and read out the actual number there, but close to 10 billion. Wow, that's a lot of money for a one game. With this money, Canada can host Brazil, Argentina, Spain, Germany, and more national teams for weeks. I think that's what they meant, was 7 digits. With 7 digits, the highest number is 9,999,999, which is 10 million. Close enough. Sometimes numbers in soccer don't add up.
And sometimes like footy prime in math doesn't add up either.
Yes. We were very confused last week.
Yes, we were.
Plus, Sharms didn't want to throw Josh under the bus for his article that went up maybe a little too quickly with the 10, the 10 digit.
Since been amended.
Exactly. Yes. Hey, listen, he admitted it straight away. He goes, it was my fault. Anyway, how about the US one? Let's throw that up.
Sure.
There. This is from Turtle Soup. Turtle Soup. You can actually eat it from their bowl, from their shell.
Oh, really?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
It would make sense, though.
It would. Soup in a half shell. Turtle power.
Anyway, Turtle Soup says, I can barely read this in my eyes.
Can you
want me to read it?
I'll go ahead, Dubs. Dubs, you go.
Panama doesn't have much of a friendly schedule either. South Africa twice so far. What's amusing, is Haiti also playing Iceland and Tunisia. Even Mexico playing Iceland? That's weird. USA schedule is otherworldly. Germany, Senegal, Portugal, Belgium. Another thing, all their games last year were home games, and so will all their friendlies coming up, and so will be World Cup games. Syntax, but I'm just going to soldier on here. They have a huge advantage that way. What can you do? And that was from Turtle Soup 3624.
It is a lot of home games in the States, huh? And it's a home tournament, so I guess why not? But you tell me, ex-players, I mean, what do you gain from an away match that you wouldn't gain from a home match? Is that getting together, the chemistry, the collective, you know? The bonding, the gelling, or is that all just bullshit?
No, it's certainly not bullshit. No. I think it's important to kind of be out of your comfort zone a little bit, to be out of that bubble. It might allow you to trial certain things, right? I mean, whether you're Poch or you're Jesse Marsh, you're prepping for specific opponents now that draw and your opponents are known. But it's, you know, what kind of curveballs will those opponents be throwing at you? And maybe trying different players, giving them minutes, and maybe you have a little bit more freedom to do that when you're away.
I agree,
Amy.
I was thinking, though, those are big teams that the U.S. is playing. Could this backfire by, losing full confidence if you get trounced 3-0, 3-1, 4-1, in your lead up? That, for a team like the U.S. who can be very Jekyll and Hyde-ish, and the players and the coach don't always seem to be on the same page. I mean, we have drama because we had, the Alphonso Davies injury and things like that, but they've had their own drama down south and a lot of it. And I'm all, from Potch just talking about, I think it was Tim Weah said, FIFA has got to figure out how to get more fans in the seats because of ticket pricing. Mm-hmm. And Pochettino said something somewhat belittling, somewhat blowing it off, saying he should stay in his lane. He should be worrying about his play on the field, right? Mm-hmm. And so and then there was issues with players coming back to play versus staying in Europe last window before Christmas, I think. So I wonder if that is actually could backfire against the U.S. about playing teams that are a little too, and I'm not saying you don't want to test yourself, but three losses in a row leading into a World Cup, can that be problematic, Craig?
Yes. Yeah, it can. Definitely. Going back to the 94 World Cup when we had a slew of friendlies before that World Cup with Morocco, Spain, Germany. Who else? Holland, Brazil. The Brazilians were happy to play Canada. It was a nice friendly. They thought it was going to be. They're going to fill the net. They're going to have lots of confidence going into the World Cup, and we ended up getting a draw. Next thing you know, they wanted everybody fired. They wanted the team changed. A month later, they win the World Cup. So, yeah, the opposition. Yeah, do you want that strong of opposition all the time going into the World Cup? I would say not. I would think you want to keep your confidence high and maybe test yourself once or twice, but having three or four really strong teams, especially against the U.S., it could backfire.
I also think, though, it's a good question because I think if we're going to play Germany and we're going to lose 3-4-0, I'd rather that friendly than in a World Cup. Because if tactically we're not getting it right against a Germany or a Spain, we get a sense of how they're playing and what they're all about. So going into the tournament now, if we do end up meeting, we're prepared in a way because we played against them already. So we know what they're going to be like. So I would rather have that good competition because you can always go back and fix things. In a World Cup, you can't. You're done. It's one game you lose, it's finished. You can't go back to it. But I just think when you're playing those friendlies against good competition, I think I would rather learn that way than playing easy teams, going in bags of confidence and then end up losing two games, 3-0 and 4-0. I think it's better to play these tough opponents because then you know the standard as well.
And the flip side is if they win one or two of those games, they feel great.
Yes.
They beat Germany. I mean, it goes both ways. And you look at their group. I mean, listen, the States, I'm not saying there's anything untoward with the FIFA World Cup draw.
Yes, you are.
It's not a tough group, really. I mean, I'm not saying they can cruise through this group because Paraguay will cause them issues. Australia on their day can cause some issues. And then it's a play-in, right, between Turkey, Romania, Slovakia, and Kosovo. So if Turkey gets through that group, they're a good team. I've got a feeling this could be a disaster for the States, this World Cup. They haven't impressed me under Poch. Like you said, there's a lot of question marks to that team. On their day, yeah, they're a good team, obviously. But they have they impressed anyone here yet since the last World Cup? I don't think so. They're hardly world beaters.
I would think of the three powerhouses in CONCACAF, Canada, United States, and Mexico. I think Canada right now are the best of the three.
Not according
Can
to
they
one
prove
of our
it?
Listeners.
They better.
Mm. Not according to one of our listeners. We've got a comment. Well, do you see that one?
No, which one, brother?
I think it says Canada on it.
Oh.
This is from Stefan Wolf, who can be controversial at times in this comments. Gold Cup was a crash out. Canada would not have qualified to the World Cup if not host. Be honest. Let Marsh earn it. He is no Tuchel. I think he's been provocative, trying to cause an issue here. To say that Canada wouldn't qualify in an expanded World Cup from CONCACAF is kind of crazy.
Yeah, like 48 teams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We better.
Even if you don't think they're up there with the States and Mexico, they still qualify, I would think.
I think you also found a kindred spirit in Stefan Wolf. Provocative.
Provocative?
Yes. Yes.
Not promiscuous. Provocative.
I wasn't going there.
Oh, okay.
Promiscuous.
I see.
You need to be able to pull to be promiscuous, Sharms.
What's that?
You need to be able to pull.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole point.
Have some riz, right?
So, like, I said I wasn't promiscuous. I said,
my gosh, stop throwing around words like riz, please.
I had to look up mog. I didn't know what mog meant.
I don't know what that means either.
I just looked it up because people were using it. It's a street term, a kid's term, to mean outshine someone either physically or personality wise. So if
and
you
say
get
the
mogged.
Word again?
Mogged.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Toot toot, fam.
Not to be confused with mugged. Two different things.
That too.
Did you get mugged last night?
And then, Sharms, you put in bedroom
in Holland.
Pitch. You put bedroom pitch in. Do we want
to? Oh, yeah.
That
this is from our boy DDC, David Colwell. Yeah, last week, we tried a hilarious segment, which no one understood. It's very difficult.
Yes.
Things you'd hear both on the double pitch and in the bedroom. So our boy Dave DeCola, get in.
You worked hard on this, eh?
Yeah, get in. I like that. It's really always hard. Rising. Do you hear that? Oh, always rising. Yeah, of course it is when it goes over the bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. There's some magic in the box. He's found the spot.
That's a great one. I love that.
That's going to hurt. I haven't seen a beating like that in years. She's done it again. And look at the curve on that one.
Bravo, DDC.
Well done.
He did forget penetrating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good one. That was good. All right. Anything else you got there?
Not worth it.
Jesus Christ. Oh, okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah,
it's been a day. It's been a week for you, eh?
Tuesday, it better not have been.
It's
been a month. Champions Cup later today. Ottawa up against Nashville.
Oh,
interesting.
Fun.
So we'll look back on that in the next couple of days. It's a Champions League week, the weird whole play-in knockout side of the tournament, unless you're top eight in this whole Swiss model kind of confusion. Anyone enjoying the Champions League and the Swiss model? Anyone understand it yet?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit much, isn't it? You do?
I understand it, but I think we need a couple
of good moments.
Years.
Last match day, there were some great moments. It did kind of come alive, but I don't know.
Do you have to be unemployed to watch all the sports that are on right now? Literally, like, this would be perfect as a student in between classes. You go, you race back to all hang out together, have an afternoon pint, a cheeky pint as the team uses. But you literally, if you have a full-time job, and sometimes we do, sometimes we don't on this pod, I have not been able to watch certain sports. Like, I didn't even know. Yeah. I didn't know the schedule for the men's and women's Canadian hockey teams. Like, I don't know when they're on. So hence me missing.
10:40 tomorrow morning, Canada's playing, right?
Is that men's or women's?
Men's.
See?
Yeah. You're not.
It's a golden age. It's a golden time for the daytime bartender. Not only are you serving all the drunks who want to watch the sports, you get to watch them yourselves.
Yeah, that's true.
It's good.
Yeah. Ah, day drunks. Good old day drunks being removed.
Yeah,
miss it.
Yeah, and then Sunday morning, I'm on the way to a rink in Barrie on Sunday morning, so I have to watch it on my phone in the back seat with Joe while Tony drives. If they get to the final, if Canada gets to the final.
It's nice that it's a family outing, though. Yeah. Like all three of you.
Tell Tony to put the partition up next time.
Yeah.
Does she wear the hat and gloves as well?
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She's the chauffeur. All right. That's Footy Prime for another day. A nice, easy day in the push-up challenge. I think it's like 46 or something.
I already knocked him out.
Wow. Good.
Wow. Wow. I'm in the morning.
Good for you. Well done.
You guys look so buff.
Yeah. Hey, won the soy tricep this over the weekend.
It is. I got a tricep back. I have a little bit of a line.
Oh, look at
that. Fantastic. Oh, yeah.
Is that a point?
Longer's got a tricep like you've got a tan.
Gray and tired.
Anyway, welcome back, Jimmy. Welcome back, Craig. Make sure everyone likes and retweets and subscribes and comments on whatever platform you want because we like these shows.
Oh, and Sharms, reminder, James Johnson, CSME, and Kevin Blue, CEO and General Secretary of Canada Soccer. Last two, you have to listen if you are not just a Canadian soccer fan, but a soccer fan, just to see governance, executive powers, and decision-making. It's all really interesting.
All the sexy stuff.
All this, yeah. Yeah. And finance.
Well, very, very few, if any, negative comments so far, which is unlike those interviews usually.
Sometimes.
Something new.
Something new. Anyway, we'll speak to you, if not tomorrow, it's going to be Thursday, but who knows? Stay tuned. Later.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com to sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, Charlie. What you doing?
Pepper.
Show them your dirty laundry.
I want a baby now. Jimmy, best thing about your trip. How was the resort bar?
Yeah, that was great.